The Bellabys were relaxed and happy, but I couldn't say the same about myself. Hunger was tearing fiercely at me, and the minutes on my watch were ticking away relentlessly. There was a decent interval before Mrs. Bellaby went over to the old fire oven in the corner, opened the door, and pulled forth a great flat baking tin of steaming apple pie. She then proceeded to carve off about a square foot for each of them, and deluged it with something like a pint of custard from another towering enamel jug. The family set to as though they were just beginning the meal, and once more a busy silence fell on the group. Bob cleared his plate in effortless style and pushed it wordlessly into the middle of the table. His mother was ready with another great rectangle of pie and another copious libation of custard. It was going to be a close thing, I thought, but this surely must be the end. They would realize time was getting short and start to change. But to my consternation, Mrs. Bellaby moved slowly over to the fire and put the kettle on, while her husband and Bob pushed their chairs back and stretched out their legs. They both wore corduroy breeches with the lacing undone, and on their feet were enormous hobnail boots. Bob, after a search through his pockets, brought out a battered packet of cigarettes, and lay back in a happy coma as his mother put a cup of tea in front of him. Mr. Bellaby produced a clasp knife and began to cut up some plug tobacco for his pipe. As they rearranged themselves round the table and began to slowly sip the hot tea, I found I had started to exhibit all the classical symptoms of tension. Pounding pulse, tightly clenched jaws, and the beginnings of a headache. After a second cup of tea, there were signs of activity. Mr. Bellaby rose with a groan, scratched his shirt front, and stretched luxuriously.
"Well, young man, we'll just have a bit of a wash and get changed. Bob'll stay and talk to you. He's not coming with us."
There was a lot of splashing and spluttering in the big stone sink at the far end of the kitchen as they made their ablutions. Then they disappeared upstairs. I was greatly relieved to find that it didn't take them long to change. Mr. Bellaby was down very soon, transformed in appearance by a stiff and shiny suit of navy blue serge with a faint greenish tinge. His wife and daughter followed soon in a blaze of flowered cotton.
"Ah, well now, here we are. All ready, eh?"
There was a note of hysteria in my heartiness.
"Right then, off we go. After you, ladies."
But Ruth did not move. She was pulling on a pair of white gloves and looking at her brother sprawled in his chair.
"You know, Bob, you're now but a disgrace," she burst out. "Here we are, going off to hear this lovely music, and you're lying there in your muck, not caring. You've no interest in culture at all. You care no more about bettering yourself than one of them bullocks out there."
Bob stirred uneasily under the sudden attack, but there was more to come. Ruth stamped her foot.
"Oh, really, it makes my blood boil to look at you. And I know we won't be right out at door before you're asleep. Aye, snoring there all afternoon like a pig."
She swung round on Mrs. Bellaby.
"Mother, I've made up my mind. I'm not going to leave him snoring here. He's got to come with us."
I felt the sweat start on my brow. I began to babble.
"But don't you think perhaps, I mean, might be just a little late. Start at 2 o'clock. My lunch is..."
But my words were utterly lost. Ruth had the bit properly between her teeth.
"Get up out of there, Bob. Get up this minute and get dressed."
She shut her mouth tightly and thrust out her lower jaw. She was too much for Bob. Although an impressive eater, he didn't seem to have much mind of his own. He mumbled sulkily and shuffled over to the sink. He took off his shirt and they all sat down and watched as he lathered his torso with a large block of white Windsor and sluiced his head and neck by working the pump handle by the side of the sink. The family regarded him happily, pleased that he was coming with them, and content in the knowledge that it would be good for him. Ruth watched his splashings with the light of love in her eyes. She kept looking over to me as if to say, "Isn't this grand?" For my part, I was only just stopping myself from tearing out my hair in great handfuls. A compulsion to leap up and pace the floor, to scream at the top of my voice, showing that I was nearing the end of my tether. I fought this feeling by closing my eyes. And I must have kept them closed for a long time, because when I opened them, Bob was standing by my side in a suit exactly like his father's. I could never remember much about that ride to Dalaby. I had only a vague recollection of the car hurtling down the stony track at 40 miles an hour, of myself staring straight ahead with protruding eyes, and the family, tightly packed but cheerful, thoroughly enjoying the ride. Even the imperturbable Mrs. Hall was a little tight-lipped, as I shot into the house at 10 to 2 and out again at 2 after bolting her good food. I was late for the Messiah. The music had started as I crept into the church and I ran a gauntlet of disapproving stares. Out of the corner of my eye, I saw the Bellabys sitting very upright, all in a row. It seemed to me that they looked disapproving too.